You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Come on, children, gather round. Wanna tell you about a town. Don't get your hopes up, keep them down. But look up in the sky, what's flying around? It's Sci-Fi July. It's Sci-Fi July.
Woo!
You see those blinking lights and hear that crazy voice? Are they out of this world? You bet. Noise. Sci-Fi July. It's Sci-Fi July. Now stay with me and we'll get real quiet. Telling you about something, it's a riot. It's Sci-Fi July. Music.
All right.
Oh, nice one. Right.
Sick.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, and we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
I'm sorry.
And Erica.
Guys, just let me shine my crystal up into the sky. Just let the light hit it, and then you'll see. You'll see, guys. I promise. Yeah. Just stay with me. It's going to take longer than it should, but I promise. Boy. I promise it's coming.
Those people, the whole town gave up on her in about 2 minutes. They're like...
So, we don't buy this. And welcome to the beginning of Sci-Fi July, an infinity of titles. Where we're going to talk about the sci-fi movies released by New World Pictures. But joining us, we have a special guest. His first time on the podcast. He is an actor. He is author of the Phil Walton Mysteries and co-host of the Microdrama Doses podcast. Our friend James Kirkland is here. Welcome, James.
Hey, thank you. Yes, I am an actor. I was an actor, but I am an actor as well. I used to trod the boards. I trod the boards. Did you know I trodded the boards? Yes. That's what we call the business. That insane old man is definitely me in the future. That's for sure. Charlie is me.
Charlie, yes. Oh, yes. Charlie. We are all Charlie, really. I mean, especially in this movie.
Je suis Charlie.
But we have brought James. James, now tell us a little bit about Microdrama Doses before we get started here.
Yeah, it's a podcast I hope I've had with my friend Marie Lively. We talk about vertical movies. Now, you guys talk about a lot of movies that people like and don't like, you know, in a healthy split. And so do we. We talk about movies that might not even be called movies. They have a lot of names. TikTok movies, people call them. Micro dramas, verticals, they're also called. Algorithmic storytelling. What the deal is we watch up into the paywall on these apps, and then we review whether you should keep going and actually pay hard-earned coins in your apps to continue watching these movies. And let me tell you, they are... In fact, we are starting to review some of the AI movies that are starting to be released, which is very fun because we can be very mean to everyone involved and not feel bad at all.
Well, you're certainly not going to hurt AI's feelings.
No. Even this movie, I'm like, I can't be that mean. People really try here. I mean, it might have been a long time ago.
Right.
And they might have failed absolutely on their face, but, you know, I don't know if I could be that mean. I probably will.
They did put out effort. They certainly put out effort. Mm-hmm. Well, that is great. Everybody, please listen to that podcast. But we are going to dive in, as James said. We are going to be diving into our first selection in our infinity of titles for this month, 1986's The Aurora Encounter.
It was the end of a century, a time when flying was still a dream.
Wish me luck!
Why is that important? That's not critical to the movie.
But dreams did come true.
Time filler.
And in Aurora, Texas, where the people were ready for anything, along came Aurora Encounter. Some were surprised.
Still don't believe me.
Well, I believe you.
Some were bewildered.
I had the great pleasure of not only playing checkers, but sharing my elixir with a little fellow that came out of that contraption.
Yeah, but you a got few him drunk,
figured
Grandpa.
It all out.
Charlie.
Ridiculous.
Aurora Encounter. The difference between what is impossible and what is possible is in what you believe. In Aurora, Texas, it became the excitement, the experience, and the encounter that was out of this world. Aurora Encounter, America's first extraterrestrial adventure. Believe it or not.
Even the trailer.
Yeah.
Even the trailer is long and boring. Yeah. Yeah.
1986 is the Aurora Encounter, brought to you by the Aurora Burial Mound. If you need a place to play or talk or just have a quiet old think, there's no place better than the Aurora Burial Mound. Looking for a feather? We've got you covered. Old bones? Done. Want thrills? Our infamous cave-in ride is one you'll never forget. Now with even more cave drawings, easy to light torches, and our spooky breaking ladder. So come on down to the Aurora Burial Mound, located next to the creek where the alien lives.
Kids enter free.
They sure do. Oh, man. This movie was directed and produced by Jim McCullough Sr. He was a regional filmmaker in Louisiana who had also directed Mountaintop Motel Massacre, which we talked about on this podcast. It was also released by New World. McCullough Sr. had heard about the story of Aurora, Texas, this real story that this movie is based on, back in 1978, and he had his son, Jim McCullough Jr., write the script, but nobody would touch it. Then came E.T., said McCullough to the Houston Post, getting the last laugh, they say. McCullough Sr. told CineFantastique that he hoped audiences didn't mistake the movie as a, quote, E.T. ripoff.
No one's gonna think that
E.T. was entertaining, so
that'll be the biggest difference.
They won't.
The difference ends there.
Oh, we should watch E.T. That was fun.
And he felt that
Aurora Encounter could, quote, stand on its own against any competition, and that audiences would agree.
I'm not sure what that competition is, but
it does stand on its own.
For period pieces with alien encounters, it's right up there.
For sure.
With Cowboys and Aliens? I'm trying to think of another one.
Wild Wild West?
Wild Wild West. It's a genre that's not good.
They keep trying and they keep failing. I get it. It's seductive. We get like, oh, you know.
Yeah,
oh,
you're like sci-fi, Westerns. Old West. Yeah. This'll work. It's gotta work. It's two great things that people love.
Maybe I should try to make steam in sci-fi. Maybe it shouldn't be an exact, like, modern replica. It should be set in pioneer-ish times.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Erica. I don't even want to know what it is, but don't do it. Even Back to the Future fell into that trap and made the worst version of that movie in the Old West. So just don't do it. It's a seductive spider hole, and you should not go in. It's like a burial mound cave where you want to check it out. You want to look at the pretty crystal. And then you're falling in, and you know, you float it out by the little guy.
The amount of times I've been seduced by spider holes and just gone in with the best
intentions.
Too many
to count.
Too many times. Too many times. When will I learn?
You won't.
They're filled with spiders. That's why they're called spider holes. What am I thinking?
You always think one's going to be empty. An optimist.
This movie starred Jack Elam as Charlie, the local elixir salesman slash town drunk. Elam had a long list of credits.
Also, the description of every character that Jack Elam ever played.
It's true. And in Westerns particularly, including he was in Howard Hawks' Rio Lobo. A more significant credit, however, would be 1976's Creature from Black Lake, which was produced by the McCulloughs, and that is probably how he got roped into this. This also has a special appearance from George Spanky McFarland, Spanky from the Little Rascals, who plays the governor in one of his final film roles. This was it. This was the end here for him. He was like, I think I've done it all.
I peaked.
Done all, the Little Rascals. I've done sci-fi westerns. I don't know what else I could do. I think I've climbed to the mountaintop.
Yeah. What else is there?
Walk away on top.
Here's where you can watch the Aurora Encounter. It is on Tubi.
Tubi.
Shout TV. It could perhaps show up on our YouTube page, so check our YouTube page. It might be there. Or you can go ahead and get yourself this lovely VHS, which is how we watched it.
It is also on Amazon Prime. I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah. I have
for free.
Shout TV.
For free. Oh. Okay. Oh.
Relatively free. You have to Prime, but...
Well, you have to buy, But it was interesting for me because I kept, like, stopping the movie and having to do things, then going back to it, and then it kept wanting to me... It did not suggest it, even in recent watch. Like, it was trying to bury it. Right. I had to keep putting in... Or I had to spell it out every time. The entire thing.
I was like, you don't want to watch this. You don't want to watch this.
The algorithm was like, no. Please, anything else.
Like, I don't accept.
The algorithm's like, were you trying to type Enora?
Yeah, Enora. No, there's a whole Aurora mystery series about a girl named Aurora who solves mysteries. 1 through 8 were suggested before this. I was like, okay,
there's
I get
no
it.
No way you want Aurora Encounter. That just cannot
someone,
be. No.
Someone submitted a ticket to a developer at Prime that was like, someone keeps trying to pull up Aurora Encounter, so something is wrong with the code. You must deploy a new build immediately, because that is impossible.
Smart of you, James, to not put it in your watch list so that the algorithm cannot start suggesting more of these kinds of movies.
Fair.
No. Yeah. Do you like movies without story? Do you like movies without conflict? You'll enjoy these. It's pretty insane. I did count the conflict. The conflict starts at hour 09. 1 hour and 9 minutes is the FBI agent showing up and being like, you can't do that. I was like, this is the first conflict in the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two people with opposing views. Wow, look at this.
Yeah.
And it ends very quickly.
We finally get there. And then nothing happens.
They're like,
and then there's a small conflict, and then we are in denouement territory for another 20 minutes. But anyway, let's get into it. Here's what this... We're going to talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is the Aurora Encounter about?
So I want to... I just want to talk quickly about how I said at the top, I'm sorry. I owned this VHS many, many years ago. And I remember watching it. In fact, I remember taking a quote from this movie and putting it into a song that I wrote years ago. And I had that exact VHS, well, not that exact one, it's not the same one, but I had it. And I remember thinking it was terrible at the time, but every time it got brought up, in my mind, I remember it being better, or I remember it being fun, at least. And
yeah, you have been calling for this one for a while.
I think that's, and so I'm sorry, because I'm wrong. I'm dead wrong. And I'm willing to accept when I'm wrong. That's,
you know, some...
Mark, I have a question. What was the song? What was the quote that you used in the song? Do you remember?
It was the quote when he comes in, he's got the dog, and he's like, come on in, little buddy. And it's Jack Elam's character. I had taken that quote and put it into a song. And I don't remember which song it was, but I remember using that quote. And as soon as that came up again, I was like, oh, that's where I got that dumb quote. didn't make me sentimental for the movie. I just, you know, now I'm like digging through cassette tapes from four tracks and trying to find where that song exists, but it's around here somewhere.
You gotta find it. You gotta find it.
I want to hear it. I want to hear it real bad.
We gotta hear
I hope
it,
it's like a hardcore hip hop, like gangster rap.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look at me. You know how I roll. You can tell how I roll.
Come in here, little buddy.
Yeah, Mark's rocking a Hawaiian shirt right now. You know he's down.
Yeah, that's hardcore. That's hardcore.
Hell yeah. There for so long. Yeah,
but
I would love to hear that. But yeah,
about?
And we never say this, but Mark wrote the theme song to our show. So you know,
we never say it. It's like the best kept secret. Yeah. We should probably say it. We should probably open with that.
Yeah. We never say it, but. Yeah,
there is someone on this podcast with talent, and it's Mark. And it's James tonight. But it's
no, stop it. Erica, I want an album of all of your songs that you do at the beginning. Where's that album? The fans want that.
And I still have nothing of note. But anyway, Mark, we're talking.
Ryan, you hang in there, okay? One of these days.
Yeah,
all right?
I will discover it.
Come along, little buddy. Come along.
Mark, what is this movie about?
Aliens. Just like you and I, we're all just looking for a good place to park.
So,
I mean, it's hard to find a good parking space, am I right?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
100%.
You know, it doesn't change what you're driving or what you're flying. You got to find a good place to park. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so true. James, what is the Aurora Counter about?
Well, I'm kind of upset because that was my answer as well. I wrote down that this movie is about parking. It's about the sheer, just so many scenes of him pulling in so slow. Mm-hmm. Don't chip the paint, baby. Okay, gotta slow it down. And then doing his business, don't really know what the business was, and then pulling out. Oh, here he goes. It's takeoff time. You know, oh, what's he going to do? Oh, he's going to leave. And, you know, you wonder, like, why don't they show parking in movies? Oh, yeah, because it's so boring. It's the most boring part of any story.
Mm-hmm. 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 Arguably the most boring part of driving.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Tedious. I always saw it tedium.
Tedium. Yeah.
This is a very LA movie in that regard, just in that, like, he is in a small town and he's like, oh, I gotta go back over to the burial mound, so I better get in my spaceship and fly over there, even though it's probably...
Can't walk.
It's probably 30 feet away from town. It's probably
But that's like an hour walk for that little guy, you know? You gotta think, you gotta factor that
maybe,
in.
Maybe. That's true.
But you're right. It is kind of an LA movie. It's a show business, you know? Charlie is an actor.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. An actor who's fallen on tough times.
Media, you know, she owns a newspaper. You know, this is about the media as well. Mm-hmm. There's deeper levels here that we don't even realize.
So true. Erica, what is this movie about?
Don't let the sexy title fool you guys. This is not Sextember. This is fucking Sci-Fi July. So you know what? It's not about... is sex. Tell you that right now. Nobody in this town's having sex. I don't even know where the children came from. I think they're orphans that wandered over from another town that failed because nobody in Aurora, Texas is doing it. I will tell you that right now. You want to know how I know that? Because the hottest woman in town is not only running a newspaper, she's also the school teacher. Mm-hmm. She's also an amateur pilot. She's also a photographer. She's also a journalist. She's also into crystals. And what that tells me is despite having the hottest, arguably the hottest boyfriend in town, they're still not doing it.
They're not. Arguing for sure.
Yeah.
Probably
that's
from the
it.
Lack of doing it.
Yeah.
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 For me, I thought this movie was about the origin of the Weekly World News.
Oh.
This is where it started.
Oh,
this
shoot.
How it began.
Yeah, yeah,
and
good call.
The news source that we've trusted for decades.
Yeah.
Centuries, if you will.
Yeah.
Who can forget that riveting story about Bat Boy?
I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely. I had that t-shirt, and boy, did our parents not like that I wore it a lot.
Yeah.
They were like, you got that shirt on. You got that shirt on today, huh?
But when you put that on, man, it made you a lady killer.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
They just flocked to me. Like, it was moth to flame for sure.
Yeah.
Mothman to flame. It was a bit of a shopping experience, though, to go to the grocery store and then being in the line, which is like the parking of the grocery experience, to be honest, the most tedious part.
Sure, for sure.
But then you could look over to your left and you'd be like, whoa, alien Pope. Okay. I'm gonna flick through this, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Bring it back. Mm-hmm. I'm saying bring it back. I don't care about the celebrities, whatever the stupid magazines they have now. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Bring back the weekly world news.
The absolutely crazy stories. I mean,
Ryan.
Do it.
There you go. What about that?
That could be bad.
I feel like, Ryan, that's if anybody's going to bring it back,
it's Batboy himself.
Gotta go. Mark, hopefully when you're looking through all those tapes, you find my old Batboy Fountain Cave shirt.
Oh, man. I'm looking. I'll dig for it.
I think I put it by your old tapes, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
Fingers crossed. Here's the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you dare. If we dare you to follow us.
You know what? I'm going to continue a tradition of your podcast and start my Letterboxd right now.
Yes!
Yes.
I'm joining.
Do you hear that Letterboxd? Come on.
We've at least got
five people to sign up to your platform.
Yeah.
That's right.
Peter, making Peter proud.
While you do that, I'm going to mention the very brief synopsis. In 1897, residents of a small Texas town are visited by a benevolent
benevolent.
All right, wow. We'll get into it. I don't know about that, but benevolent. That seems we're giving him a little bit of
lackadaisical. I'm not sure with that.
Yeah,
benevolent extraterrestrial being whose presence divides the community. Nope, that is not true. No, he does not.
In the sense of some people believe that there's an alien and some people don't,
But there's like a handful. I mean, I guess it's a small town, so I guess a handful of people does divide the community of this very small town.
Yeah, I mean, half the town believes in penicillin, the other half doesn't, but that doesn't mean penicillin divided the town.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good call. How are we doing with that Letterboxd account, James?
I'm in. I hacked the mainframe, and I am in.
Wow. Good job.
That is amazing.
Review number one, Aurora Encounter.
Aurora Encounter is my first review. My handle is at Costco Films. Join me there. Follow me.
Kirkland, you got to love with that brand.
It does help.
So we start in this movie, and I didn't always like to start at the beginning, but we got to start here with the credits because, of course, they're the typical credits we always see, which is just white letters and a black screen. But this time, we're treated to something a little bit different. Mm-hmm. We get a voiceover, which just helps set the tone, gives us some backstory as we also are looking at credits.
I'm Charlie Hankins, and the story I'm about to tell you is true. I don't give a damn whether you believe it happened or not, but you can just ask anyone from Aurora, Texas, and they'll tell you it's true. See, the railroad had passed us by in Aurora, and we were having a terrible time that summer. What with the drought, crops failing, boll weevil eating the cotton, spotted fever epidemic killing people. I come through all right. So did a lot of other folks that took my famous Dr. Neptune's elixir medicine. I figure the alcohol in my elixir probably cooked the germs right to ashes. But what was really so important about that summer was the contraption. It was a flying thing. Sort of squatty shaped, with little wings on each side. And when it swooshed in just like an eagle, it made a scary sound, like a wind howling across a Texas prairie. And it could move so fast it'd be gone while you blinked your eye. And the little fella driving it was sure a strange one. Now, one of those folks that died that summer was Ben Peebles, our newspaper editor. He was sort of the backbone of the town, and his daughter Elaine, who was the local schoolmarm, she took over the paper. Oh, she was bright, all right, but she thought she was just as bright as any man, and we all know that ain't possible, no, sir.
Wow. What? Whoa.
If you went from annoyed about these opening credits to instantly furious, raise your hand.
so unnecessary. Like, why?
Right. It's like, damn, he went right for the throat on Peebles. Damn.
Also, if you are thinking that the incredible misfortune that fell upon this town plays an integral role in the story, it does not. In fact, that's the only time that you learn that there was nary a thing that went wrong in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everyone else seems pretty darn happy. I mean, sure, there are a lot of kids without parents running around by the river, but everyone else seems to be doing just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
would have been nice to hear about some of those plights, the honest, like a little bit of conflict, a little strife.
We're just seeing, they're like, hey, tough times were tough, but not this story. This is a story when times were just fine. This is
not this week. This was a good week. The other week
times
was bad.
Times were average.
We thought we'd tell a story about how things were just okay instead of difficult and tough and difficult. Yeah. But I gotta like, you gotta like how this movie, it's set in 1897 and they're just like, hey, we're not hiding from the casual sexism of the time. No, we're gonna dive
right in. Of course.
And they slip it in because this whole monologue is going over credits, which is also like, why aren't we seeing some visuals? Why wasn't this played over? This is a movie. Why are we just hearing this and looking at credits?
It's anything.
Anything.
So a river flowing, a tree, you know, the town, just stuff like B, just lock it off, just roll camera. You're on a set.
Bunch of B roll. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Just show us something. It's just credits. It wouldn't have made a difference.
It sets a tone for the movie.
You're like, why is this already so boring? And you're like, well, the answer is going to be displayed in the next 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
As he mentions, Miss Peebles is the woman he's talking about, played by Carol Bagdasarian, who had appeared in some TV and the 1980 Chuck Norris movie The Octagon, which I highly recommend. And this is her final screen credit. So talk about a couple actors already that are like, I'm good.
I'm good. A lot of people checked out on this one.
Yeah. They did the Aurora Encounter and they're like, I'm good. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm down.
I could do the same for watching movies in general. That could be it. Maybe this will be my first and last Letterboxd review. That's it for me, guys. No more movies.
We did it. We ended another person's passion for cinema.
I mean, why go on? This is it. But she does inherit her father's newspaper, and it's only one of many things she's doing. As Eric was mentioning, she's teaching, she's dating the town sheriff, she's inventing flying. We do see a spaceship delicately land slowly, very slowly into its space. And you can barely even see the wires that's holding it aloft in the air.
Well, the blue glow helps hide some of that.
Some of the fishing wire and all that. Mm-hmm. But and we quickly learn what a perv the little alien is. He decides that his first earthly encounter, if you will, should be watching a woman in silhouette get ready for bed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Are we ready for Sextember? Because it's not time for that.
It's not. It's definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah. She lives alone. It should be pointed out. She lives alone. So there's no sexy time that's about to happen there at all.
Yeah. She's a widow. This is the widow Irene. She's played by country music star Dottie West in her acting debut. West had scored a big hit in the 1970s with her duet with Kenny Rogers titled Every Time Two Fools Collide. I was unaware of her as a country music star, but the filmmakers sure aren't, because they make sure that character is involved in the movie, even though there's no reason for her to be around in this movie. It makes no sense. She doesn't need to be here.
No point sings any songs.
No. What was the point?
Nope.
Well, you have her. Why don't you have her sing? It doesn't make any sense. Outside of this scene, I don't know why she continues to be there. There's even a scene later on where, like, the sheriff comes up and they sit for a second on her stoop and they just talk about, like, I don't know, maybe there is an alien. I don't know. Anyway, that's it.
Bye. Yeah, no, that's it. They have tea. They have tea and don't talk about anything that's going on.
Nope.
It's crazy weather we're having, huh? They have bow weevils. Yep. And damn bow evils.
Yeah. It's like, why is she here? It doesn't make any sense. But anyway, it's because she was a star. And so they were trying to get her to, you know, get her into the movie more and more. She's not the only one making her debut. The alien is played by 13-year-old Mickey Hayes.
13, 1-3.
He suffered from progeria. It's a disease that makes the body age faster than usual.
Oh, wow.
And McCullough, the senior, had heard about Hayes in the newspaper, but he hesitated initially about approaching the parents about casting him in the movie. Probably because you're like, hey, your son, I think he looks like an alien from another world, and I want to put him in a movie. I don't know how you approach how that even worked, how he did that. I mean, in many ways, like, despite the movie, just like how he is able to go to their house, knock on the door, be like, look, I'm a director, I'm making a movie about an alien, and I want to cast your child. And they went, you know what? I think that'll work. Like,
you're going to put him in a lot of makeup, right? You're going to put him in a lot of prosthetics? Nope. Nothing at all. Kind of a crystal gown. And that's
They're
it.
They're like, oh, a little stuff on his ears. But other than that, nothing.
Little ears. And then nothing else. That's it. But then just au naturel. We just love his look.
You know what I bet sold him, though? He knocked on the door and he was like, I have a script for an alien movie, a sci-fi movie set in pioneer times, and it's gonna hit. And they're like, well, shit, that does sound interesting.
It does sound good.
That sounds a little sexy. And he's like, oh, tut tut tut, no, it won't be sexy. No,
this will be the antithesis of sexy.
Yeah,
if you could imagine, like,
any amount of arousal you feel will just be zapped from minute one. You're gonna be watching this entire movie in dry dock, but you're gonna love it.
Well, it depends on what your kink is, but my question is, you know, with child labor laws
my
on a film set,
my kink is narration over opening credits. Oh no!
Oh boy!
Well, then stay wet, good buddy, because
I peaked early. Oh shit!
I turned it off 45 seconds in.
This is like when I worked at the video store and people would return the adult movies they were renting, and you would open the box and look at it to see if it was rewound, and you were like, oh, that's how far you made it in? Oh, okay.
Damn.
Did you put a note in their file? 15 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess the labor laws for a child, is it based upon the age of the child or the age that the body thinks the child is?
That's,
Wow.
Yeah. They were able to work him a full day.
Edit out my laughter. Edit out my laughter.
Oh my god.
The teacher came to set and was like, I'm sorry, I'm waiting for the children. Where are the children?
Oh, oh, no!
These kids over here.
Oh no.
Well, Hayes, let's get back to something a bit better.
And then Peebles was like, I got this, and just started also teaching the on-set children.
This is my real passion. I'm going to quit the movie biz. And then get back into the movie biz in a different way. No, but for Hayes, this was actually exciting. He actually was excited about being in the movie, and he told the Longview Daily News in March 1986, he said that being in the Aurora encounter was, quote, the best thing that ever happened to me.
Oh.
Yeah.
God damn it. Well, see you in hell, guys, for laughing at that earlier comment. So save you a seat. Save a seat for anybody else who laughed.
You know what? He does look like he's having a good time. I got to be honest. Yeah. He's smiling. You know, he's having a great time.
He does.
He's having fun. Mm-hmm. He's having a good time. Yeah. Now, we can laugh at this. Hyping up Hayes' performance in this same article, McCullough assistant Marcy Bryant said this about Hayes' performance. She said, quote, he is constantly in the movie, and he is very effective with the use of his hands and face in communicating.
What a review.
Wow. Wow.
He learned his lines and everything, she might as well have said, but didn't.
But I don't think he even had any lines. Did he even say anything?
No.
No. No. Not a word. Not Nothing. A word. But I'll say you this much. He is constantly in this movie, and that is high praise.
High praise. High praise.
Oh, my God. That is just like, I know you were aiming for a compliment, but you ultimately could not pull one off. That was just
damning
amazing.
With faint praise. Yeah, that's pretty
good. Yeah, that is rough.
But I want to point out that just before we go any further, this first interaction is the first of many where an alien on a ship lands in front of a house in 1897 and nobody freaks the fuck out. If I pulled up in front of a house in a 1990 Isuzu Rodeo, they'd be like, holy shit, what the hell is that?
Which is what his spaceship looks like. It looks like a silver Isuzu Rodeo. Literally does.
Not wrong.
It would just be like, you couldn't even get a Hyundai? Come on.
Maybe kind of a Trooper, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, God, if you couldn't go for a Trooper.
You need some four-wheel drive, bro. You're in the country.
Well, that would be a rodeo. But, you wouldn't get that from a Hyundai at that time. But anyway, we digress. That's for the car cast. That's my other podcast.
That's right. I'm sorry, Mark. I made too many car references. I should know better. My bad.
But nobody loses their shit. Like, everyone is just a moment of like, oh, who are you? And then I saw an alien and a ship. Maybe it was the boll weevils that just got the yips out of everybody. So they're just like, ah. At this point, I can handle anything. But you would think there would be more fear, which would also be a point of conflict. The fear in everybody. Mm-hmm. Instead, everyone's just
it's a really good point. Yeah, Mark makes a good point because no one really emotes at all, ever, in this movie at all, over anything. There's no emotion in any way. No one is happy. No one is sad. Everyone's just kind of, wow.
Yeah, well, especially about the alien, like, if you're looking at Miss Peebles, she does emote, but she's emoting about, like, getting her newspaper off the ground and getting her, like, bike to fly. Like, she's emoting about that stuff. But as far as the alien's concerned, it's not, unless it's selling those papers, she's not too worried about it. Mm-hmm. You know? She's,
She's got to make that side hustle work. She's
the queen of the side hustle.
She clearly is she's ready to leave the school. She's like, I got so many. One of these things got to hit.
Yeah.
Inventor, newspaper, one of these things is going to hit, and I can leave that school forever.
My crystals business. Yeah. Where did she get all those crystals? I know we're not at final questions, but where did she get all those extra crystals?
From the chandelier. From the chandelier.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. Yeah.
I must have nodded off during that part.
Yeah, I did not realize it was from the chandelier. Well, shit, it was just that simple.
Mark. Totally understandable.
It's just that fucking simple. Wow.
Not long. Just one of those little chin drop ones. You're like,
I chin dropped my first way through, and I missed large chunks when I went back. I was like, oh, that wasn't a drop. That was a drop in sync.
I was shocked to find out this movie was 90 minutes. I was like, no, it has to be at least 2.5 hours. This is the longest 90 minutes of my life.
Yeah, it really is long. It really does take forever.
The pacing of this is truly, I guess you call it glacier-like. I don't know what would be. It's like his parking. It's like his parking. Slow, deliberate. Deliberately nowhere. It's so wild.
It really is in no hurry to get anywhere. And that's why the alien then sneaks in on Charlie, who's having a rigorous game of checkers by himself. And Charlie does what any person would do, as we were just saying, when meeting an alien creature, he just gets drunk and plays checkers with it. And
he gets the alien drunk.
Yeah,
and plays checkers drunk. With it.
And he's now like, well, that I know wasted. He was only 13, he got a child drunk.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, he did have to pretend. Apparently he really worked on that and trying to learn how to play drunk at 13. So
he did a good job.
That's what you tell your parents.
Yeah.
That's right. Where's 40. The vodka? Did we drink all this? I don't understand.
Mark, I will see you in hell. Bro, I'll save you a seed if that's allowed.
42-year-old him was like, you got this.
Erica, there's no seats in hell. There's no. Why would there be seats in hell?
It's standing room only.
There's nowhere to sit. That's the whole point. That's hell.
Brian, don't mansplain hell to me. I'm a fucking teacher, scientist, inventor, journalist, lady about town. How dare you?
Who's into crystals?
Yeah.
We also
don't mansplain my crystal business to me, Ryan.
We also learn that the alien can move things with his mind, and that's important. It's going to come up later. It really actually does come back, so it's an important thing to learn as he's cheating on checkers. It will mm-hmm. come in handy an hour later, but it's important to note it. Note yeah. it now. Mm-hmm. Write it down. Mm-hmm. Remember it. Mm-hmm. It's going to come up again, but it's going to be a slow burn.
It's a slow burn.
This scene reminded me of the scene in Frankenstein.
Oh.
Instead of the Frankenstein's monster, it's a child with a horrible deformity who comes in and instead of a blind man, it's a blind drunk actor, former actor.
Right.
By the way, I was very offended by his portrayal of former act of like failed actor too. I was like, I hate this. This is hitting too close to home. This is definitely what I'm becoming. But then he also just doesn't exchange his emotions at all, because he was already fired up playing himself in checkers, and then he was like, "Hey, little buddy, come on in, yeah." There's no difference in that scene either. But I definitely, that is, it was probably my favorite scene in the movie, if I had to pick
yeah,
one.
Yeah, well, yeah. We're gonna force you. That's a little bit down the road, but I guess you've decided.
I'm jumping ahead.
We've got no.
Let's take our sweet time getting to it, though. It's important that we don't just go to it.
We do not need to leap. We can leap ahead. It does not matter.
Bump the brakes.
Pump the brakes. We are flying through this podcast at this point. My goodness.
Of this movie. We need to discuss it. My goodness. Miss Peebles works on the newspaper articles about the town visitor, and as she does that, she heads off to meet the governor for some reason.
Yeah.
She poses as a reporter from the New York Times, which made me wonder, considering the film's opening sexist narration, were women reporters, like, accepted back then? It seems like, oh, sure.
I mean, no, that's why that receptionist was like, there's no visitors today, you dumb hoe. Get out of here.
Well, but the minute she says the New York Times, she's like, well, ooh, tut tut. Let me get him to get you in there.
She's like, oh, let me get my fucking pen, licks middle finger. Like, she wasn't going to do anything, you know? Wow.
She does get inside the office, and she has a little conversation with the governor.
Now, young lady, you tell me what's on your mind before I have you arrested.
This is an article that I'm publishing in my newspaper, the Aurora Sentinel. We have had several sightings of flying ships.
Well, I've heard stories of a German that's experimenting.
Governor, these people are not seeing the experiments of a German or a scientist or an inventor from this Earth. But what we are talking about is something from a different planet, another world. I just wanted to get your comment on it.
Young lady, I wouldn't touch that story with a 10-foot pole.
Upon learning of the bizarre incident, Governor Culberson had no comment. Thank you very much, Governor. That's all I wanted.
Ooh, getting that story. Mm-hmm.
That was all sexual innuendo, right?
Yeah, that was hot. That was the hottest scene in the movie, basically.
He's like, I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, but I would touch it with a 4-inch pole. Hey. Audio wink. Spanky.
Also, did you guys notice that he was like, well, we've had some reports of a German, and then she goes, we did not see anything like that. Not see.
Yeah. Wait. She's clever.
Uh-huh. Wow.
The crew had a real laugh over that one. Yeah.
I don't know a lot about German history, but in 1897, what were they up to then? Were they still, like, I realize World War I's around the corner, but it's still a little bit of ways away. Like, were they already getting a little...
They're doing psychiatry, I think. They were doing classical music.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they were. I'm not sure how. I think that's Austria, but I don't know. I guess even then, I guess, is what they're saying. This is historically accurate, so I'm going to take this. Yeah. They did their research.
Historically accurate as drop ceiling fans in the courthouse can be for 1897.
yep.
Which did force me to go on a deep dive about when were ceiling fans invented.
Wow, which you crunched it?
They did. They were invented prior to 1897, but they used steam to move the propeller of the ceiling fan. So you would have had a boiler pumping water in to cause steam to spin the ceiling fan, which means the long pole coming down for a drop ceiling version that's electric. You wouldn't have had that at that time.
So you have a steamer and a fan. The fan's trying to cool the room, but you have a steamer also in the room, so it's also hotter?
It wouldn't be in the room. It would be somewhere else, Ryan.
Got it. That would defeat the whole purpose. That's what I'm saying. Seems like you're really it's counterintuitive. Now the governor he at least listens enough to assign a Texas Ranger to go check this out and perhaps kill it. Oh no! If they have to. Oh boy! And then we get into the other half of this movie, which is Sue Beth and some pals trying to jail the alien. Which is, I think,
Becky and Ginger. My God, Ryan.
Yeah,
they're already orphans.
Yeah, they're orphans. And it's confusing because Ginger is the blonde girl, and the really red hair girl is Sue Ann. So, Beth, I'm sorry.
Sue Beth.
Yeah.
Sue Beth. It does.
Sue Ann makes more sense. Sue Beth?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I've never.
I thought this scene, they basically go to the alien, ask the alien or get the alien. She has the crystal. Sue Beth stole the crystal, so they're trying to go over and summon the alien with the crystal that Sue Beth stole, and then the ground collapses and they're trapped in a cave. I timed this out, it's only about 15 minutes long, but I thought this was probably about 45 minutes, this whole sequence.
The cave exploration.
I was like, wow, this movie is basically cave.
Yeah. Also, they should have died in that fall, right? I know we're not at Final Questions, but like...
For sure.
They should have died.
They should have died. They should be dead.
Yeah.
Okay. This movie is historically accurate, but not scientifically accurate. So that's the thing, you know? I mean, perfect on the history, not so much for the science.
Yeah.
And Sue Beth is just instantly knows how to use a crystal to harness the sun to light... a torch inside the cave. I mean, almost immediately she knows that one. Because, I mean, I guess every kid knew that in 1897.
She saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, bro. She knows what's up. She's like,
hold on, this is my Staff of Ra. Let me show you how this works.
Put it in, you get the sun. You got to get it in the right spot. I mean,
right.
She's like, stand back, Ginger, you dumb bitch, and see how it's done.
Yeah.
And Ginger's like, I was supposed to be the red hair girl. You stole my part. We switched lines in the first day.
Yeah, totally.
But you know, it's kind of interesting because speaking of Harrison Ford, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Cowboys and Aliens also takes place in a lot of caves. Mm-hmm. A lot of caves. Mm-hmm. That's where James Bond finds the weird arm gun. I hated that movie too so much.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
And it's like they spent a lot of money. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Really want to like it, but
Mountaintop Motel Massacre takes place in a lot of caves. Which makes me think the director of this movie's just got a kink for caves, right?
He loves caves.
Cave kink.
Cave kink. Don't shame the cave kink. Little cave. Guano for lube. Come on, let's go.
I don't live think that's a little. Safe at all.
It's not safe sex. It's cave sex. <Mm-mm. laughs>
Not safe sex. No, it is not. No, it is not. Damp, probably, but that's about it.
This is the time where the alien finally does something benevolent, much like Letterboxd said. I guess they watched this one part and probably turned it off after this, thinking, that's it, right? That's the whole movie? I get it. But he does lift the girls out of the cave, including one of the girls' dolls, and like it's the one nice thing he's done. He's just seemingly creeped around town staring at people, playing checkers, getting wasted, stealing a hat. You know, I mean, like he hasn't been like a cool dude per se.
He is as helpful as a 13-year-old.
Yeah. He's like, and you know, Charlie's like, give me back my hat, and you left your dog, and he just walks out, and I'm like, that does track with a 13-year-old. Yeah.
He's like, I fucking hated that dog. That's my dad's dog. Fuck it.
That's yours. That's your dog now. I don't give a shit. I'm 13.
But to be clear, he gets them out. He lifts them out of the cave using his superpowers. And then is like, listen, bitches got to pay. Someone's got to give me something. Okay, that doll, that's mine. I'm taking that with me. You think I'm just coming here and lifting you out of cave for free? That ain't how it works.
Mm-hmm. Ass, grass, or cash. Nobody rides for free, baby. Come on. Pay the piper.
Yeah, and then he gets into his spaceship and slowly backs away.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like...
Later.
Yep. See you hoes later.
He's leaving at walking speed. We can walk as fast as he's going.
They could have ran. They could have hit the ship with sticks. I mean...
How long did it take him to get to Earth? Also, like what?
Oh God, years, years.
All of his 13 years. had to. The girls tell Miss Peebles what happened, and Miss Peebles decides to. She wants a piece of that action, so she wants to signal visiting alien as well. And she grabs all the pieces of the chandelier and gives them to everybody in town. And is like, this is how you lure him to wherever we are. And the alien does indeed. Flies into town very slowly. He slowly tracks over the town. He lands.
This is the only time people kind of freak out. They run from the ship.
They're like, whoa, look at this thing. This is
But
weird.
I don't think it's the alien. I think they're just worried about getting hit.
Yeah.
But either way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he lands the ship, and you're like, ooh, you're going to land in that's horse shit right there, buddy. That's going to get all over. That's going to, like, that's hard to walk
Again,
off.
13, he was like, ah, you fooled you. I skipped it.
And what's her plan exactly here? She's just trying to lure the alien down to like be in a freak show or something, capture him and be like, be my star reporter. I don't understand.
Have to think it's only because she wants to write about it for the newspaper.
Yeah,
and
she just
like,
wanted
Let's
to be
lure
right.
him and just get him so I can really sell newspapers. This is all I give a shit about now.
She just wanted to be able
students.
To say, I told you so. I told you.
Right.
Unreal.
I told you so.
This is her rosebud. Yeah.
When she meets the Texas Ranger, when the Texas Ranger comes into town, she's just like, ooh, that must mean the governor knows. And believes me, you bought it. Let's go get this alien into town so I could be like, in your face, governor.
Mm-hmm.
That's all she gives a shit about.
Yeah.
But the alien does fly into town. The town finally sees him, and they react like this.
Is that the same little fella you saw before?
Listen close.
Looks human.
What should we do? Must be from somewhere else. Look at his ears.
Thank you, Ryan! I lost my damn mind during that. I laughed so hard.
Look at his ears. Look at his ears.
Like, that's it. I love that clip so much. I loved that spoiler alert, favorite scene. Because I'm like, was that scripted? Was that improvised on behalf of those extras? I love it. Like, oh my God. And then knowing what we know about him now and having someone be like, he looks human, was like, oh, well, that's hurtful.
I mean, there's so much there. Because it had to be scripted, because if anyone saw that guy, and I don't mean any offense, but the ears would be not top 10 things I would notice about this little fella.
Yeah.
No.
Right. At all.
It's like they had the line of Miss Peebles saying, like, he looks almost human, or whatever she says, and then they were like, ooh, that's a little rough. Let's ADR a line about his ears. Let's have somebody be like, he must be an alien. Look at his ears. Mm-hmm. And then, like, just to soften the blow a little bit. And
they could have complimented and be like, wow, look at his beautiful blue eyes. Because he does have really nice. Really nice eyes.
Yeah.
Mrs. Peebles could have complimented the peepers a little bit here and been like, hey, come on.
Yeah.
You know what?
Handsome little fella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She does a lot of things in town, but reminding people of their manners, not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The because he's out and about, this alien with the whole town loving him. Of course, the Texas Ranger shoots him, and Sheriff Ben then draws his gun on the Ranger, and the Ranger then just kind of goes, I shot him.
Yeah.
And then they all kind of go, you did shoot him. And then turn around and say nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And then the alien stumbles back into his ship. He starts to fly off slowly, mm-hmm. very slowly.
Again, classic 13-year-old. Like, I'm fine. Cool. I'm fine.
Don't worry about it.
Walk it off.
Fly it off, bro.
Give me the keys.
And he flies off. He crashes into the water tower.
Oh, no.
And then hits the ground. And Sheriff Temple attends to him and makes this determination.
I'll take him to bed.
Temple, is he dead?
I'm afraid so.
How would he know? How would he know?
He's what a sheriff slash town doctor.
but before that even happens, his body is pulled out because Sue Beth goes running into a burning crash site.
Yeah.
And the entire town just watches her, never says like, mm-hmm. don't go in there, just watches her walk into mm-hmm. a wreckage that's on fire mm-hmm. that ultimately mm-hmm.
She's also an EMT. Yeah, she's the town EMT.
It's a small town. Everybody has to have a couple jobs.
Yeah.
A
lot of hats.
Why didn't the Texas Ranger shoot her?
I don't know.
Maybe that was his intention. It was he's just a bad shot.
So, he's like,
well, it makes no sense because like he was before when he had the rifle on the alien made it disappear. Right? He like remember that scene and like the around the midpoint there was like a gun and then he made it disappear mm-hmm. and then the ranger kind of like stumbles off. So why didn't the alien do that this time? Why didn't Ryan tell me why?
because we'd gotten so close the time before to conflict, but we hadn't allowed it to happen. It was time for a little smidge of conflict to actually happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
This actually explains that whole scene better. So the ranger was supposed to shoot Sue Beth. The town sheriff raises his gun, but he's not pissed about the alien. He's like, what the fuck? You hit the wrong person.
If I'd had my rifle,
That's not Sue Beth.
The governor ordered an assassination on this reporter, this pesky reporter, asking too many questions about my corruption scandal.
You were supposed to
kill Peebles. Yeah. That's why it de-escalated. They were like, well, I guess this is on both of us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was gonna shoot the girl and he has a bad shot. What are you gonna do?
It also is hilarious when he takes the body out and it's just stiff as a board mannequin mm-hmm. that he's mm-hmm. holding out. Mm-hmm. Is this completely like a magic trick, like hypnosis, like when you see like magicians raise a body up? Like, oh yeah,
and they just
he's definitely dead. Like... the sheet over it, yeah, disappeared.
Yeah,
maybe the actor just had really like strong glutes and was just able to keep that back just nice and tight.
So tight.
So stiff.
Dude, his abs were, he was shredded, dude. Don't get it
ripped.
Twisted.
Fool's ripped, bro. You
know? He was 13, but he had the
It was
abs
hard to see under all that bling, but it was there. It was there.
But we're not here to objectify children, for God's
sake. My God, little feller, you've got a magnificent body. You are a specimen. Holy God.
Oh, so. But look at his ears. He might be from somewhere else. Look at his ears.
So everybody in the town is pretty satisfied that, I swear to God, everybody was like, oh, the sheriff said he's dead. He must be dead. I was like, thought.
No one even did a finger under the nose. No one did anything.
He puts the sheriff puts his head, like, or his ear almost, like, to, like, feel if he's breathing. I'm like, does he breathe? Like, he's an alien. Yeah. We don't know. Yeah. He exists in our atmosphere, but that doesn't mean he has lungs. I don't know, like, what. And they're just all like, oh, he must be dead. Oh, it's the sheriff. Like he's dead as hell.
He
innately just knows something about this.
I've never seen nothing more dead than this my whole life. Look at him. look at his little dead old ears.
Look at how stiff he is. Look at how stiff he is.
He ain't alive.
And so they have a funeral for the alien, which is actually not unlike the real story of Aurora, where they had said that they had buried an alien being in the town. And that was the story that got out about Aurora at that time that was the basis for this movie. So they have a funeral. And of course, who gets the eulogy? Why? Charlie, of course.
Trod the boards.
We don't know where this little fella come from, but
He seemed to kind of like us. And I know for sure some of us liked him, even if he was different. What we're doing here is we're putting him in the ground, hoping that all kinds of creatures go to the same eternal place. That way we'll get to see the little fella again. And I...
Fucker owes me money. I gave him several bottles of my special elixir. If I see him again, I swear...
He said he was going to pay me back.
Swear to God. Also, he did crash into our town water, and we're in a drought. Should people be a little more upset about that?
No. Is anyone concerned?
No funeral for the water tower. I like that he was like, we bury him in the ground so we all go to the same place. That's not how it works, my dude.
No.
That's not how it works, guy.
And they also all walk around, and the casket is above ground. They all leave. And so they never even buried it. They just like, we're good.
We're good. We don't need to put it in the ground. That's not how it works, right? Eventually, it goes into the ground just by nature.
Well, Miss Peebles is our grave digger, and she's not available until tomorrow, so.
Subeth quit. She quit being the dude.
That's Ginger's job now.
When she took the EMT job, she retired from being the grave digger.
That's why we have a preacher. He is here. Can you please take over for Charlie? He's got to do this. Oh, Erica, I think it's that time.
It's time for things we loved and things we hated.
Yeah, take your sweet time. We're going to talk about the things we love, things we hated about the Aurora encounter. Mark, what did you love?
I loved the mental jujitsu I had to go through when the governor sends the ranger. He says, you got to go to the town and figure out what's going on. And the ranger says, okay, I'll be there by midnight. When on that same day, Elaine walked from scrubby old Aurora to Austin in an hour and a half, 15 minutes.
She does take the train.
That must have been another nodded off.
But doesn't he say in the opening credits that the railroad skipped Aurora?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what train is she taking?
She has to go to another. She does have to walk to another town in order to pick up a train. But she does.
My point is,
they have a subway. They have a subway that goes to the other town with the train. They don't show that, but that exists.
They are ahead of the curve on the subways. Like Aurora was really ahead of the curve.
So I just love trying to figure out how the fuck she got there in no time flat, but it took a guy and a horse all day and night to get back to Aurora.
Didn't make
any sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of time wasting in this, and I don't, you know.
Also,
I'm going to get to that in a second.
Also, you live in Aurora, this town that is dirt streets, plank boards for sidewalks. They've had boll weevils and a drought, and then a hop, skip, and a jump is like brick buildings and electricity and ceiling fans and What an incredible diversion of ways of life in such a short distance. Why would you
women
choose
only
to
have
stay
to have
in Aurora?
One job in the next town over?
Yeah, just one job. You have weekends off. why just move to Austin? Why stay in Aurora?
You know, if just 12 hours on a horse, you could be in a brand new world.
Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Yeah.
James, what did you love?
If I had to pick something, and I do, I will choose the scene where Charlie is about to kill himself, I think. He's close to get the knife to his chest. My favorite scene is when the actor is contemplating ending it all, and he's doing the monologue from Hamlet. And I gotta say, it was a great rendition of To Be or Not to Be. This is my favorite writing in the movie. When he says, to be or not to be,
when he quotes
that is the question. It's nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. or indeed
my favorite
face,
was when Miss Peebles was reading from whatever book she was reading. That was also pretty great.
Yeah, that was great writing. That was great
whatever.
Writing.
Good writing. Good stuff. Erica, what did you love?
I liked Moondog, if I'm being honest.
Oh, yeah.
I like the idea that, you know, if there is life out there, they have dogs. That they're a dog-loving species. And that he traveled to Earth and was like, you know what Earth needs? Dogs. And
that's
didn't bother to do
confused.
The research.
I did like that. I love the name Moondog. I was confused. I thought that he, like, took that dog from somewhere. Or
he did.
Also, they didn't show the dog a lot. They kept talking about it, but you never saw the dog. Or maybe I wasn't paying attention. But it would be
such
like,
a mystery.
Hey,
I loved Moondog. Yeah. I love that, you know, in outer space, they still love dogs.
Well, yeah. Pluto. Maybe he's from Pluto. You know?
Oh, that's adorable.
Or Sirius, the dog star. Love
I think what I loved is I did love that the girls fell into the like cave just because it was a moment. It was the first moment I think I was like, whoa. Oh, I didn't see that coming. Like, I knew, of course, aliens were going to be involved in this. That was something that I knew going in. So that wasn't a surprise. Arguably, I don't think it's much of a surprise in this movie either. It's not played as a surprise, except for that one scene. But I thought that was actually like a surprising moment. And I was like, oh, wow, good for you. I didn't realize we were going to spend the next half an hour in the cave. But, you know, it was a surprising moment. And I was like, oh, good job. You got me on that. Let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
I hated that... why the fuck was the alien there to begin with? Well, can someone explain why?
No
what's
idea.
The point?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? Mm-hmm. He never had a mission. He never had a goal. He wasn't stranded. He wasn't looking for a missing crystal that will save his civilization. There was no reason except that he was just there to chill out and hang out with people for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
smoke a little weed and just relax. Take the edge
it's growing,
off.
It's growing wild on the edge of town. They don't even know it, dude. They are not even aware.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he there on a dare? Was he there on a dare? Like somebody from his home planet was like, hey, man, I fucking dare you to take this space dog down to Earth and then get drunk when you're there. And he was like, you
go
know
to
what?
The haunted planet. Go to the haunted planet. Go. We're like, no, I don't want to. It's scary.
Take your dad's spaceship and fucking fly it there, man. I don't have my space driver's license yet. You fucking pussy. Drive your dad's spaceship down
just
there.
Just go slow. Just go slow and you'll be fine.
Go real slow, dude. You'll get there.
That was his final thought as he was crashing the ship. My dad's going to be so pissed.
Kill me.
Unlike the town when you ruin their water supply.
Yeah.
They were like totally fine with that. James, what did you hate?
What is a story, Ryan? You know, Mark, Erica, what is a story? A story is when somebody wants something, does something to get that, has, you know, friction, is usually obstacles. And what I was found interesting about that is it really deconstructed all of those things out. Maybe we don't need stories with conflict wanting things or reasons for being there. You can just have an intergalactic peeping Tom.
Moments.
No, you don't even need that. You can just roll camera on a first draft and just say, let's go.
Let's do it. Let's do it. We're good. This is good enough. Let's go. We'll figure it out.
Enough. Good enough's not good enough sometimes, boys. And it was tough. It was a tough one, but
no doubt. Erica, what did you hate?
I hated that we didn't get any sex. I think it was a mistake, and I think it was not right. I think it was unfair.
You're a few months ahead, Erica. You're already into Sextember, but it's.
I think
it's,
it was unfair.
We're in July.
I think it was unfair, Ryan. You know. Mm.
Okay.
Even Ghost Town gave us a little sexy time.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
A nip slip. I don't know. Charlie gets drunk and passes out, and his wiener flops out. I don't know anything.
He stabs himself with a knife after reciting Shakespeare, and then he kind of rubs one out. You know, like,
yeah.
The last rub.
And honestly, that would be the most dignified way an actor could die. He died as he lived, masturbating and bleeding from his heart.
Oh, man. Well, the thing I hated was there is so much wasted time in this movie. There's so much. Mm-hmm. And, Mark, the reason I know about the train is because I went back and tracked this scene because Miss Peebles goes in the train to go see the governor. She gets off the train and she walks through town for a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. There's no dialogue. She doesn't meet anyone of consequence. Mm-hmm. There's no one we see later. She's like, kids are playing baseball. It's like she's like marveling at everything in the town, which are arguably, I have to think, things that also exist in her town. It's not that wild.
I don't know. Maybe it's not. That's how poor the town is.
I don't know. It just isn't. There's nothing of note that happens. And it's a moment of many that happen in this movie that you're just like, why are we spending all this time in this moment? There is no reason. There's no reason.
100%.
And even if they had cut some of these things out and trimmed the ends of scenes in the Corman fashion and just got this thing down to like 84 minutes. Whatever.
Four or five minutes. Just like 5-6 minutes. They could really tell the tale. They could really...
They could drum the... They could whittle this down to a
trim
good
the
5-6
minutes. 30 seconds. Flat. Yeah. I will say, though, I do, and you're talking about it, I did remember, like, there was one shot that was very beautiful, and it's, like, the first shot of the movie, basically, when, in the funeral, when it, like, opens in the funeral, it's, like, gorgeous, and it's, like, misty, and there's, like, umbrellas, and I was like, wow, this looks like, okay, this is interesting. This looks like an awesome.
And it's shot from down below as they cross the bridge. It's actually a really lovely shot. Yeah,
and then they have just like a really boring conversation, and the husband and the anti-chemistry they have is like, sounds like you're biting out more than you can chew. This is your ninth job. She's like, I don't give a fuck what you're saying. I hate you. We're never having sex again. I literally sexless. Despise your face.
But even in that shot, they could have just panned to the little guy like watching them, because it was also like, who's watching them from down there? Like something...
Yeah, it is weird for point of view stuff. Something. It's so... Oh, God.
The alien ever named, or they just call him Little Fella? Was he Little Fella?
They never give him a name. They don't get to know him enough to name him, but they all go get real sad at his funeral. Okay. I mean, you barely knew him.
You declared him dead in 5 seconds. He's just... That could have been...
Yeah,
he's
everyone's
sleeping.
Like, hold on, let me take a look if he's dead. No, he's dead. Just trust me. No. I'm gonna walk in.
No, he's mine. He's mine, and he's dead.
But you make a good point. There are some good moments in this. We're gonna talk about our favorite scenes. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is not a scene that I liked, and it could have been trimmed. We could have bought at least 5 minutes just from this alone, and that is when Elaine decides that she's going to take the kids out on recess and show them that she can fly with a bicycle.
Yeah.
I mean, not only fucking how she was able to craft a proper airfoil for a plane with a leading edge and a trailing edge, and then weld supports so it can stay on her bike. Mm-hmm. And then she gets...
Well, Ginger's the welder in town, Mark. She can weld anything.
Right.
No problem.
And then there's no way she has enough speed to get any lift. She would have just taken a straight-up digger off the other end of that ramp. But
she
takes off.
Half of a hill,
she has,
Mark.
She has no rudder, no ailerons. She's just... But yet she's like, I'm just flying. No. I'm sorry. It's also 1897. The Wright brothers didn't do this till 1903. So we're like, this is...
She was ahead of her time, Mark, and nobody knew. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew.
Why?
Yep.
Sexism.
Why?
Sexism.
This doesn't affect anything in the movie. Nothing before,
it's unnecessary.
And nothing after.
No, it shows that the town was sexless. Because only somebody who's not doing it has that much fucking time on their hands, right? You won't fuck me, I'll fucking show you. I'll make my own fucking plane.
Right.
We're going to fly out of here, buddy. James, I think you've gone through several favorite scenes, so let's go, unless you have another one.
The first time the little fellow shows up, and his little face, those little ears, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Those alien ears.
I had to admit, that took me by surprise. I did. I was like, holy shit, wow.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, Erica, your favorite scene?
Gosh, I think my favorite scene is probably when little guy shows up and peeps in the window of Irene, mm-hmm. and her first thought is gun and shooting through her window. And then she has to lay down because it's been a lot that she's been through.
It's been a lot. It's been a lot.
And I, you know, that resonated.
And then in her other scene, she creeps out with the gun, like a callback scene, goes on the roof, and then it's a raccoon. And she's like, and then she falls asleep on the roof.
Yeah.
And James, thank you for bringing that up because that's my favorite scene.
She's a sleepy lady.
It's another, and I admit, I just said I hated all the wasted time. This is another complete waste of time. This is not necessary. There's no point to it. But when I first saw it, I thought that is hilarious. That is so dumb and such a waste of time. And she also gets up there and is trying to find, to a point you made earlier, James. She's going up there to find this alien, doesn't find it, but finds a fucking raccoon, and she's just like, oh, you. You have a fucking raccoon on your roof. Yeah. That's not good either. That's also a bad sign.
That means you
howling with laughter, like a crazy woman.
Yeah.
You have raccoons in your roof, and that is not a good thing.
No.
And so you actually have a problem. It's not the problem you were thinking it was, but you do have a problem, and you're like, and you lay down on the roof. I was like, this scene is not only pointless, but it is so dumb. I just thought it was so funny, and so it had to be my favorite scene.
Maybe they cut out when she fucks those raccoons after that.
They obviously did. Obviously, yeah,
clearly,
it's cut out.
Clearly.
That could have been.
Can't wait to see the bonus feet.
You know what? Audiences weren't ready, James. They weren't ready.
I wish they were ready.
Let's get to some final questions. Here are our final questions for Aurora Encounter. We know it took Ellen's father, or Miss Peebles' father, but how quickly does tuberculosis take the whole town?
Well, we only saw like 6 people until the end, so pretty quick, I guess.
Pretty quick, yeah.
There's almost nobody left over there.
Plus, with no water, they're really fucked. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Incidentally, the water tower is not going to be the place where they get the water. That's just to add pressure.
It's from a well. As soon as I said it, I was like, Mark has like been squirming in his seat, like, Ryan, that's not how a town has water.
I want to say that's a total lie, but I've been thinking about it for 15 minutes.
I know you have. All right. How unaware is Sue Beth's mom to Sue Beth's day-to-day activities?
I don't think that was even Sue Beth's mom.
No.
I don't think so.
That's not her birth mom.
No.
She didn't even have red hair.
She was just paid to sweep the front porch.
Yeah. No, she's just like, Sue Beth? Yeah, I don't know. She chills here sometimes, whatever.
Yeah. That's fair. Why does the alien take the calf?
Dare. It was a dare.
It's part of the scavenger hunt. Gotta get them all. Gotta catch them all. It's like Pokemon. He's playing like a Pokemon game. Intergalactic Pokemon. Gotta get a dog. Gotta get a calf. Gotta get a doll.
The shit he's gonna bring back home.
Oh, man.
Well, he's not. He's sitting on top of a gravesite. hoping to one day seep into it.
His coffin is sitting. You know, hopefully, naturally, the coffin will sink into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a good
that's
rainstorm. A good rainstorm is going to do it. All you need.
Right. It's like a Viking funeral where they just put them on a dry riverbed. Mm-hmm. Eventually,
they just put the dirt on top of it and just let it become a mountain.
Yep.
Yeah. How did Miss Peebles sell the school board on her taking the time to create a flying bicycle and then testing it out in front of her class?
Mm. Well, the school board's all dead of
consumption.
Tuberculosis.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, the consumption.
So she's flying on her own. Did you see? I mean, you saw her curriculum. It was like the cat chases the dog. It's not tough. It's not doing. Yeah. It's not doing like.
Sue Best run in that classroom. Let's be honest.
And since it's come up, how is consumption not just like a nice way of saying somebody killed themselves by drinking? How is that not the way they described that?
Or ordering too many things on Amazon and dying. We're all dying of consumption in our own ways nowadays, I think.
Oh, but we get it so fast.
God, it's convenience. Worth it.
The convenience.
So quick. So quick.
I think the answer to your question is the way that you frame the question, though. Because if you tell a kid that someone died of consumption, they're going to go, oh, I guess I shouldn't eat so much or whatever. If you say, oh, he drank himself to lesson. Death, that's a little harsher. It's just like the nice way of...
Oh, you're like,
that.
Oh, cut my alcohol consumption in half and I should be okay. Yeah,
right.
It's not as like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't. That guy just consumed.
Yeah.
Until he died.
I got this disease called alcoholism. I better take some of Uncle Charlie's cough medicine to cure myself of it. Seems to be working.
So he drank too much? No, he just got really into Benadryl. He just would not stop with the... He was pounding NyQuil like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. Robo tripping.
Slept like a baby, though, and God, those sinuses were just crystal clear.
Just could breathe so well. He threw those breathe right strips in the trash. Lastly, how bad is Charlie at checkers? A game I would argue you shouldn't have to cheat at in order to win.
Yeah. He's exponentially bad. He's so bad that I was even confused what moves he was making. I'm like, what do you have you played this game before?
It was like clearly everyone in town had been like, I'm not playing with you anymore, dude. You're so bad at this. This is pathetic. So he was like, I'll show you. I'll play myself as different characters and then kill myself after a monologue of Shakespeare. And apparently it's so easy that a guy from another planet can come in and easily know how to play. It's that simple.
Crush you. Yeah. Absolutely shameful. Well, I have a question,
That I didn't fault. That was not a leap. That's checkers.
Yeah, sure. Yes, leap. James, you have a question. checker terms.
Is a little fella dead? That's my question.
I don't think so.
Because I don't think so.
I don't think he was dead.
I think he was just fine.
Joshing.
He's napping. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now they put the crystal on his coffin and like then like a I don't know, it lights up and then like a spark kind of flies off into the heavens, but I'm like I was expecting him to actually like get out of the coffin. I was like he's not dead. Yeah. Cuz again, I mean the
do a little song and dance number. That would have been something. Mm-hmm.
<It's> like,
hey,
I came here to dance. I'm not allowed to dance in my home planet. And here I am free to dance. Now that's an ending. That is an ending.
Yes.
And then he has all the stuff that everyone gave him. He's wearing the hat. He's like holding the doll. He's riding the cow.
Yes. Oh, God, Erica. Yes. Now, where did that cow go? Now we have a story. Now I'm like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand everything that made sense.
Yeah, that cow's dead. It probably smelled, that crash probably smelled delicious. Because if that cow was in the spaceship and now it's burning up, it was probably, that's why Subeth ran towards it.
Yeah.
She was
Texas
like, dinner!
Barbecue! Hey!
I smell
Sup's
burning
on.
Beef. I smell carne asada. All right, let's get into some quick research. This was shot in 1984. It started in September of 1984. That's when they shot it. And of course, it was shot in Texas, in Ferris, Texas. They actually used some of like a existing ranch. It's called the Big D Ranch near Ferris. would actually had like all those standing sets where they just kind of made that. It was like a where they'd shot a bunch of westerns and stuff. So they turned that in the town of Aurora. Though over Charlie's house, and this bothered me, Mark, so maybe you'll appreciate it. Over whatever that building was originally named, they had printed a sign to go over it. And I was like, were they able to print signs like that back then? Didn't they just paint it on wood and then put it up on the thing? Or just paint it on the wood of the building. You can't print a banner that doesn't make... That's not the time. But anyway. So they...
That's what you didn't like about the movie, Ryan? That was the thing?
Wow.
Yep, that's what set them off.
That was just the first thing that I was like, that's weird. Because also, what's funny about it is that it's drooping and you can kind of see a little bit of what was originally there behind it. So, because it's just a banner and they didn't hang it right. Anyway, so they shot at Big D Ranch. They also shot
He's really mad. He's really mad about that banner. Look at his ears. Look at his ears. He might not even be from here. He looks human, but look at his ears.
Cine Fantastique actually reported about the special effects, which were done by Chuck Comiskey, who worked on New World's Battle Beyond the Stars. And they say in this article where they talked to Jim McCullough Sr., he said that the effects were nowhere near as extensive as McCullough expected. On-location improvisations created some effective sequences without the cost. The costly special effects work. These tricks included a small-scale model of the UFO mounted on a pickup. Shot from a helicopter, the model obscured the vehicle and effectively conveyed the ship sweeping through the city streets.
I'm sorry, sweeping? That implies that it went with any amount of speed. Oh, wow.
I mean, to be fair to Cine Fantastique, I don't think they've seen the movie yet. They're just reporting on it. So, I mean, they're taking his word for it. A full-scale mock-up was suspended from a huge construction crane. Now, that I get. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of that. And swung over a two-block area of the city for scenes of the craft buzzing the town. Or just parking. Like, that's they're clearly just craning that thing in, which is why it's taking absolutely forever to park. Just rough. Anyway, speaking of rough, they showed some rough cuts. Took place in April 1985. Showed it in Dallas in rough cut form. The reviews were strong. 8 out of 10 viewers were in tears, says this article.
What? Tears of boredom? Tear-
yeah.
yeah.
Please let me go. Please.
Can't I get out of here?
Let us end. Kill me. Kill me now.
My parents would let me leave. Texas was fast becoming a place to produce films, and while I think director Jim McCullough financed this, it was made in conjunction with Houston International Televideo Inc., or HIT, H-I-T, and HIT was reported to be making a multi-picture deal with New World Pictures in May of 1985. They're trying to get the film industry going in Texas, and as we know from some of the movies we've covered on this podcast, New World does eventually buy Film Dallas Pictures, which is a Texas-based film production company that did Kiss of the Spider Woman and The Trip to Bountiful, which were both fairly successful. And
acronym not as cool as HIT, but sure.
Not as cool as HIT. And then they bought that company and then they released, you know, other movies that were not those two. So, released on March 7th, 1986 in Oklahoma, Virginia, and Texas, the same day New World released Mountaintop Motel Massacre. They released them at the same time in just a few states around the country, which is what a lot of people were doing with low-budget movies at that time, releasing them in a bunch of different states to try to drum up some kind of interest and then eventually putting them on video, which is what happens. It arrives in video on July 1986, just a few months later. Along with that month from New World Video, we got House, which we talked about on this podcast.
Oh.
Where did I come from? The video, where did I come from?
Oh, my God.
Which we like maybe did.
Sex education video? What is that?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
My God. Are you going to save that for Sextember?
Sextember.
Yeah.
Sextember, y'all.
Put it up there in staff picks.
And also Las Vegas Weekend, which we all know and love. We've all heard of. And
so popular.
What was the cost of Aurora Encounter upon release on video?
Oh, man. 80 bucks?
80 bucks.
80 bucks!
What?
80 bucks. Yeah.
In 1986? That's like $500. What are they doing? What? Who bought that?
Well, that's because like you had video stores all over the place. They'd get like two copies, but they would make their money, or one. And then you make your money back eventually. But yeah, they sold videos for so much money back then.
Wow.
Not sure how well it sold, but McCullough Sr. told the Shreveport Journal that, quote, the pre-sale was great. So apparently Aurora Encounter did pretty well.
So before anybody saw the movie, it was going well.
Yeah, they were already buying up copies.
Unfortunately, after people saw the movie, the sales dropped off considerably.
They didn't know what it was, so they bought it sight unseen. And so they were like, this has got to be good. Then they got it, and they were like, damn it.
The cover was more exciting. Oh, damn it. Tricked again. Tricked by the movie rental store again.
Oh boy, we're all tricked so many times by the video rental store. Oh my gosh. So but that true. Is it. That is the Aurora Encounter.
Man.
James, thank you so much.
Oh wait, Ryan, Erica, thank you both, and Mark as well, but I forgot to say one thing that I saw in my notes here. The helicopter opening scene, which is, I guess, to like imply the flying of the little fellas Ford Taurus spaceship through rural Texas, is the most unsteady cam I've ever seen ever. So nauseous. You're just like, I was like, what is, I had to turn away from getting like a vertigo nausea feeling, which is not how you want to start your movie. It's like the opposite of the beginning of The Shining, where it's like a beautiful helicopter, really steady cam. This was absolutely insane.
And thankfully, one of the few things they were actually like, let's not linger on this.
Yeah, that's
they were
true.
Like, let's cut on that real quick. They didn't do that often, and thankfully they did there. Mm-hmm. Any other final thoughts on the Aurora Encounter?
I'm sorry.
You're not forgiven. You're unforgiven, my friend.
James, we cannot thank you enough for being on the show and for watching the Aurora Encounter.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you all. It's really fun, you guys. Really fun.
Tell everybody where they can find you besides Costco Films at Letterboxd. Where can they find you? Where would you like people to find you besides Letterboxd?
I'm at Jamie Kirkland on Instagram. Wait, let me check. Instagram, James R. Kirkland. Find me on Instagram, James R. Kirkland. Jamie Kirkland on Twitter. Thank you all. Love the pod. Love the new world. Love you three. And hate this movie, but God bless. God bless Texas.
We love having you, James. We hope this means you might come back. But thank you for being on the show. Thank you all for listening. We hope you're enjoying Sci-Fi July, an infinity of titles as we go through a lot of the sci-fi titles, more sci-fi titles from New World Pictures. If you want to listen to our past episodes, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can find all of our episodes, interviews, t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. It does help support the show. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
Have you ever wanted to dive deeper into the horror movies you love? Beyond the Blood is a horror podcast for fans who want more than just surface-level screams. We do deep dives into the movies that shaped us, digging into director commentaries, behind-the-scenes stories, deleted scenes, and the special features that most people skip. Each episode is a love letter to the genre. We break down how these films were made, the creative risks that paid off or didn't, and the lasting impact they've had on the genre as a whole. From 70s slashers to modern nightmares, we celebrate the craft, chaos, and characters that keep us coming back. If you're the kind of fan who rewatches movies with the commentary on, or you simply grew up in the video store horror aisle, the Beyond the Blood podcast was made for you. New episodes every single week. Subscribe, let's dig deep. Welcome to the Beyond the Blood podcast.